This is episode 42 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
I think you may be suicidal.
Four series regulars. Three go, one stays. Me. You know what the odds of that are?
1 in 128,000.
What happened was arbitrary. It was purposeless. It wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything to deserve this. So no, Nora, I don't want to kill myself. I want to take some fucking control.
From Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast about The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk about Don't Be Ridiculous.
Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I never thought I would have ever wanted a tattoo as much as I do now.
What?
The Wu-Tang Clan is like, the Wu-Tang Band is definitely my jam.
There you go.
Definitely my jam.
Totally a Blake Larson tattoo. My God.
Blake friendly. That's what that is.
Yeah. So that was quite an episode.
Wow.
Two down, six to go. And that was awesome. So I'm really excited to talk about this episode. But before we do, we need to address a couple of things that we forgot, that we didn't notice, that we missed over in regards to last week's episode.
Let's
be real. It's okay. It's okay that we missed some things.
It's
because
just so
this
layered.
Show is amazing.
So
exactly.
So many things going on. Let's
All
do
right,
it.
So what did we forget?
All right. So Kevin, when he, at the beginning of the episode,
yeah.
Wearing a Mapleton hat.
I even wrote that in my notes.
That's right, and we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
I know.
Oops,
I know.
Sorry.
That does sound like trite. It does sound like we're making that up. I promise we're not. But yeah, he was wearing a Mapleton Police Department hat.
It's with the one, Jardin like logos and everything else on the rest of his gear.
On the rest of his gear, yeah. So a really cool call out to the first season, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell it's the Mapleton hat because it has the maple leaf with
so sweet.
With the Indian on it. And yeah. Really, really cool. I really like that. And then also, a user brought this up, Nina Rooser on Twitter. She says, can we talk about Nora shooting herself in the chest?
Yeah.
It pretty much equals the same thing as Kevin's bag.
Okay.
He is essentially turning into Nora. And she, before this episode, mm-hmm. this current episode, called it. She said that Kevin was just trying to feel
mm-hmm.
the same exact way that Nora was trying to feel when she hired Angel the prostitute to come to her house
and
shoot
name.
Her. I know. And there was also something that Nina brought up that I'm not proud of.
Okay.
I mean, it happened.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to work on it.
Please.
But she said, guys, love your podcast, except when Blake says my love too many times in a row.
Oh, my little pet name.
Super cringy. And I did admit to Nina on Twitter openly that it is probably a crutch word of mine that I use when I'm nervous. And I will admit being on Facebook Live to, you know, all the people and then getting in front of in a podcast for the first episode in over a year. Yeah, I was a tad nervous.
He was.
It was a tad.
You were very nervous.
I was like,
yeah.
You know, I'm surprised you didn't hear the quiver in my voice. So hopefully we don't have that issue this time. I will try my best to come up with a different name for you. How about my darling? I don't know. My love. Whatever we can do, I will do that. But for now, Mary, what was your Damon rating of episode 302, Don't Be Ridiculous?
It was a five. Five out of five. I gave it five demons. I loved this episode. I love me some Nora. Honey Badger is back. Mm-hmm. She just has zero Fs. Mm-hmm. It's been amazingly fun to see Nora change over season one when we gave her the name Honey Badger, when she did that whole thing where she just knocked off the mug and was like, whatever, I don't care. I'm just going to knock this drink over. To then becoming back to being like this family woman in season two. And now season three, it's like she's got personality disorders going on and she's been hiding things, but not hiding things because she's just so cool and chill and likes to crack jokes. I got to see all the multifaceted sides of Nora in this episode, and I loved every mm-hmm. single moment of it. Loved the music. I found out where Erica was, where Lily was. So five. I'm just going to leave it at that. We're going to delve into it more.
Okay,
five.
good. For myself, I'm giving it 4.5 demons, the same exact rating that I gave the premiere. When I first watched it, this newest episode, I was kind of down on it. I'm not going to lie.
Oh my, really?
I was a tad down. And the reason why I was down was just because I don't think I had enough time to process. I watched it late last night as I was waiting up for my darling wife to call me from the Tribeca Film Festival, big time over here. That's where she was. And it was late, and I just, you know, I was down on it. But then as I went to sleep, I woke up this morning, and I was like, you know what? There's a lot going on in this mm-hmm. episode that I did not consider. And we'll get into that, obviously, but there was a lot of great stuff with Nora and also Mark Lynn Baker. Having him on the show.
That was awesome. Totally
so effing
for
cool.
That.
There yes. was so many cool things with Mark Lynn Baker that he was on the show and the fact that they actually got him on in this kind of capacity. Really, really, really great stuff. The issue that I take with this particular episode was the ending, like the epilogue in Australia. And it's not that that was bad. It was fine. Actually, it was quite great. I just don't feel that it fit into the narrative of what they were trying to accomplish in this particular episode. I feel like that is something that you should bring up at the beginning of an episode, perhaps, because it would seem to fit better if it's in the beginning. Like, it's just, it throws you into something, and then you drop off to the next story. And then that particular story finishes out. We were dealing with a lot of weighty, meaty, heady issues with Nora.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're dropped into the world of Australia again with Kevin's dad. And then we're looking at these four ladies and they're drowning this other guy and we're hitting kangaroos and like, what?
Can't. But
again, not bad. I liked it. But it just didn't fit into what they were trying to accomplish. In my opinion... For this episode.
See, I like it because it makes me think back to season two when Evie and her friends drove off silently, and that should have been the biggest light bulb in our minds to say, oh, they're joining the guilty remnant. But it was just this little extra throwaway thing at the end that you kind of forget about. Just like the birds, just like the end of this episode hitting a kangaroo and sorry, oh, you're Kevin and all this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, it wasn't the big picture, but they needed to drop this in. They needed to drop this in so that we can pull from it. I
agree. I don't mind it. Seeing it. And Shane Bowman, by the way, who is watching us live, he said, Blake, my love, you are nuts. And I appreciate that, Shane. Thank you so much. And again, I'm not to say that it is a bad. I really enjoyed it. I don't feel like it was in what they were trying to accomplish.
Okay.
So
some other Damon ratings we had in. Sarah Daw said that she would give it 3 because all of the answers that she got were cold and sad. I don't think this thing with Baker is going where our creative minds want it to go. I just keep reminding myself that there is probably won't be any more supernatural events taking place mm-hmm. in the series finale and everyone is just coping.
Yeah. Clint
Church also gave it 3 Damons, said it was good, but easily the weakest of the 3 Norse-centric episodes, don't you think? And it's a good discussion topic for the podcast.
Yes, in which we're going to get into that.
Guest and Lens really dive deep in the overarching theme of grief and really opened up Nora's character. Call me crazy, but this episode, says Clint, pales in comparison to those episodes. Granted, those are 2 of the best episodes in television ever. All right, Blake, you keep going.
Ellie Moon says the honey badger has been unleashed.
Yes.
And she does not want it to stop. 4.5 demons. The pacing, however, was a tad slow. And the Daily Review, great podcast. They do all these really great things with The Leftovers and some other great shows that they cover. Please go listen to them. They're amazing. They're really nice people. They said Five Damons. Anyone marking the show off for the theme song was not alive in the 80s, and it makes total sense.
Yes.
Yes, I would agree with you guys.
Yes.
And Steve Blaze says 5 Damons out of 5 just for working Mark Lynn Baker into the plot.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, Marvin. See, that's another pet name I got from Mary, Marvin.
I know, I get the most really weird pet names.
Marvin, what do you got?
Marvin.
What do you got for this episode 302? Don't be ridiculous. What do you think is the meaning behind this title?
So I straight up didn't understand this meaning. I mean, obviously, don't be ridiculous. I feel like that's all Nora wants to say to people.
Okay.
Because she's a total, like, departures aren't happening now. This weird stuff isn't happening. Don't be ridiculous. This stuff can't happen. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's battling with because crazy stuff has happened. But then I just saw these Google notes and now I know. I know the title.
So I didn't have anything deep.
I'm not a mooch. We have Google notes that I'm supposed to read from because that's Ron Burgundy. And if I don't read Google notes,
I
say weird things. So, yes.
I have the Maryism bell ready to go. No, I'm waiting.
I was actually really excited that the title was ridiculous because it is one of my favorite spells from Harry Potter when, you know, ridiculous.
You're a wizard, Harry.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Well, clearly, you are not a fan of The Perfect Strangers. Because
I don't think
I
was allowed to watch it.
Because this was Balky's famous line.
Was it?
Don't be ridiculous.
Yes.
Don't be ridiculous from Balky. That's that.
Yes.
So clearly, you know, you may be off your game for this segment. You might be off the game.
I am.
But I will give you credit, though. I will give you credit. You did attack it. And Nora and Kevin saying, this is ridiculous. Obviously, the book is ridiculous. Don't be ridiculous. All this stuff. Come on now. So it does have double meaning. I'm very proud of
ridiculous.
You.
Ridiculous.
I'm very proud of you for that.
It's time to reheat The Leftovers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, give you the particulars of this particular episode.
Breaking it down.
It was written by one, the lonely Donkey Kong, and Specialist Contagious. Now, I know you're asking, Blake.
What does that even mean?
What the hell is that? Who are these people? That doesn't make sense. And what you will
notice. Because that's what came up, like in the credits after you heard.
That's right.
The song.
That's
which
right.
We will get to. Literally in the sparkly font, you see the lonely Donkey Kong and Specialist Contagious. So well, yes, I was wondering what
yes.
was going on.
Well, just so everyone is clear, that is Damon Lindelof and Tom Parada. And what they had done was, you know, to celebrate the fact that, you know, Nora was into the Wu-Tang band, they went online and they typed in their names into the Wu-Tang Clan name generator to find out what their names would be.
Nice!
And the Lonely Donkey Kong and Specialist Contagious did come up. Now, for those of you thinking, I wonder what my name would be in the Wu-Tang Clan, let me tell you.
Okay.
I went ahead and took it upon myself to figure out what Mary in my name would Please. Be in the Wu-Tang Clan. And Mary's name is Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, no. Only to be ended by my name, which is Zexy Prophet.
Mine is so much better.
I don't know about that.
Is Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
And Zexy Prophet for me. So,
like, not even sexy, but Zexy is so yours.
Zexy, like nice. With a Z.
Yeah.
So from now on, at least for the rest of this podcast, I will be referring to you as Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Instead of my love.
Yes, instead of my love.
Oh, have good luck with that.
So I just want to say, Nina Ruzer, I hope you appreciate the Spunky Misunderstood Genius as opposed to my love.
Facebook Live is saying I win in the name department.
This episode was directed by Keith Gordon. He is a returning member of the directing staff for The Leftovers. He has, in fact, directed 1013, one of my favorite episodes of The Leftovers, and also Two Boats in a Helicopter, another favorite of mine. So good. This guy directs the hell out of everything, and he does. He's also worked on Homeland, Fargo, Masters of Sex, Dexter, and The Killing, among other television shows as well. And the director of photography, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because his name is Michael Grady, and I did not give you the director of photography last episode, and he was the DP for that episode as well.
Okay.
Now, he has done movies like Annie, The New Annie.
Oh, my God.
The New Annie.
Which I saw.
Yes, you did. Friends with... You made me watch it, too.
I did.
Friends with Benefits, the one with Mila Kunis and yes. Justin Timberlake. Easy A.
Okay.
And Notorious.
Right.
He's also done some episodes for The Leftovers, including The Book of Kevin, I Live Here Now, Lens, and, of course, the coup de grace... International Assassin.
Oh, okay. Done.
So this guy, he knows what he's doing, and he is excellent. So my love, no, I cannot say that anymore.
No, you can't.
Sparky Misunderstood Genius.
Yes.
What are we doing? How are we attacking this episode?
Well, first we're telling a little story. So The Leftovers makes you think. It makes you talk. And if you watch The Leftovers with someone who you love, it often makes you think about a little something. So I've got a 2-minute story for you.
Am I telling the story or are you?
Do you have a story to
tell? I do.
Blake will then.
Okay.
Blake will tell a... Put on a little Max Richter underneath this.
Oh, I don't have that prepared. You're gonna have to speak for me.
So I'm gonna give you my 2-minute story, but from here on out, each episode we're gonna pull from one of these themes and give it a little real life experience because that's what this show does. So I just came back from New York. I came because I was at the Tribeca Film Festival. And my boss that I work for helped make a film, a documentary about the man in the red bandana who actually helped save at least 10 people in 9/11. And in this documentary, which was incredibly difficult to watch, the mother was even there in the film screening room. There's a clip in the documentary about the mother saying, you know, they couldn't find his body. Come to find out, the gentleman had been up on, God, I think like the 78th floor of the South Tower. And he, by the time the building collapsed, he was actually on the first floor. So it took them several months to find his remains. And they had to have a funeral without any remains. And so there was this clip with the mother just talking about how difficult it is to have a funeral without a body. Without any piece of this person. Like, there's nothing you can say goodbye to. There's nothing you can bury. And so it hit me a lot. And then I come home and I watch The Leftovers. And when Erica's talking to Nora, she's able to say, Evie died. I buried Evie. You didn't get that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. So it was really, it hit me home and it made me realize, you know, how hard grief is in general to lose someone, but when you lose someone and you can't say goodbye, it haunts you. It haunts you. So that's my little story that just happened this literally 24 hours before I watched this episode. How about you, Blake?
I will say that I felt that this episode was about identity, as is most of Nora's episodes. And I will tell you, one of the things that I've struggled with as of late, and if you have been a fan of Mary and Blake and all the things that we do, you will know that I recently went through a very serious, bad bout of depression. Very serious depression. And the only thing that helped keep me out of that depression, aside from my beautiful wife sitting across the way from me, is podcasting. And I really, really loved podcasting. It was one of the things that actually gave me an identity. I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else. So thank you to all of you who are watching on Facebook Live and the thousands of you listening to us on the podcast. It was all because of you that I was able to get out of that depression. And I couldn't be any more thankful.
Mm-hmm.
So we see Nora struggle with her identity, what she is, what she isn't, what she wants to become. And I struggled with the same exact thing. So that is my story. That is how I relate to this episode. What do you think? Is that good?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Look at us getting deep, guys.
Especially with the tunes in the background here.
Can't help it. Max Richter. All right.
Max Richter does that to you. Okay, so what do we got here, my
love? R.I.P. Dirty Santa. We shall no longer be able to truly talk about that amazing... Like, that would have been his Wu-Tang name, Dirty Santa.
Right.
Oh, my God. Heart attack fell. I kind of didn't know what happened. I wonder, like, are you done? Okay, bye. Like, I didn't know what happened.
Right. And well, then when he hit the ground and you heard the smack, I feel like you knew that was the end of Dirty Santa.
Yeah, I guess
That poor guy, he wasn't going to make that.
So how do you feel about people who don't depart. You know, the DSD where Nora works, their phrase, just coming from New York, it is see something, say something. That you see it all over New York. It's all over the posters. It's the big phrase for terrorism. Like, you see something, you say something. At the DSD, I don't know if you saw their sign, if you don't see something, say something. And, you know, just going through this, we've been able to see her. She's now in charge. That whole thing, like, you know, get a lawyer. And if someone says someone departed, if someone said someone's missing, you get a lawyer. If someone says someone departed, you get me. And she's just pushing these people. And it's so much of it is her grief. Mm-hmm. So Dirty Santa, of course, passed away from a heart attack, yep. Fell. He was up there for 5 years. His wife was totally supportive of him in this entire process. And then he has a heart attack. She takes him to Matt because she wants a burial, but then she also tells to Matt, like, we're going to lie and say he departed.
The return of Brett Butler, by the way. Her name is Sandy.
Okay.
You know, Grace Under Fire girl. She was in last season. Remember that? She was the one who wanted Matt to hit her son on the, oh, or her friend on the back with the thing.
In the whole, like, camping area.
Yes.
That's where she's from.
That's the return of Brett Butler.
Okay. So that was like, you know, 10 days, the countdown's on. It's 10 days until the departure day.
That's right.
So 7-year anniversary of the departure day.
I'm really liking this time frame that they've given us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because is everything going to happen within this time frame? I mean, not everything, obviously. We already know that we're seeing a future with Nora.
Yes.
In Australia. So not everything, but it's really cool to have this, almost this ticking time clock of what's going to happen. When is it going to happen? It puts a lot of pressure on the show and on the viewer to be like, okay, let's get to the point, mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. I really like this a lot. But you know what? Let's just talk about the new song.
You're right. How did I skip over that?
I mean, seriously.
I like that they didn't have to change any of the graphics or intro because it completely fit. And I didn't know what it was at first. So I was sitting there and I'm like, why am I feeling happy? Why do I feel like I'm going to laugh? Why do I feel like I want to eat Pop Rocks and drink Tang?
And do the snap things on my wrist.
And wear snap bracelets. What is going on? And then I caught myself singing. I started to sing along. And I was like, what? This isn't original.
All right, hold on. Yeah.
I love how you, like, totally don't want to sing it out loud. Because you're rocking it.
No, I'm totally rocking it.
Okay, so is this going to be the theme song for the entire season?
No, it is not, as a matter of
fact.
How'd
you find that out?
Well, because I'm awesome. I mean, we already know that. The opening credits, spoiler alert, will change every single week.
Yes.
And I got to admit, I'm a little sad about it because, like I said last episode, I was really feeling the Iris Dement, like that whole Let the Mystery Be thing. I really felt like that was an apropos choice for this show, even going forward, you know, for season three. It just made sense. But then I was watching a video with Damon Lindelof, and Lindelof said to IndieWire, he said this himself, we've done something different with the credit sequence this year. We've tried to make the sequence an overture for the episode. So whether it's a Nora episode that we just saw, or a Kevin episode, or a Laurie episode, the song for that particular episode will reflect that particular overture. So that in and of itself is saying it's going to be a different song every episode.
Awesome.
And you know what? I'm cool with that.
Yes, me too. I'm cool. Really excited about that, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's one more thing to look forward to. You know, you're going to often, when you get used to listening to a song, an opening song and the credits, you can just kind of like zone it out. That's when you're getting your drink or you're just chatting and settling in. I often some days even fast forward. I know I got a good two and a half minutes.
Right, but now that's going to be a different song. It's as that much part of the show as mm-hmm. every other opening. And more to that point, like, I really feel like there are only a few openings of shows that I will sit and watch every time. And
now you will with this
and
one.
It's because, and the reason why I do that, I figured it out, is because it's an interactive thing, like Game of Thrones. It interacts with you.
Yes.
And it shows you where you're going. It's usually relatively the same. you kind of watch. You're like, okay, where am I going today?
Yeah. Where, who are we going to see?
So now you're going to watch The Leftovers and be like, all right, what's this song about now? Like, how is this going to happen? And
yeah.
I thought it was so great that the first song was the Perfect Strangers theme song.
Love it.
And
love it.
Because of the meta commentary of it all. I mean, it was a running joke in the first season. And then they brought in Mark Lynn Baker for the second season. And then on top of this, now they give Mark Lynn Baker a legitimate scene.
Yeah.
And they're putting the Perfect Strangers theme song onto the whole thing. And it's like an episode of Perfect Strangers, but not, because it's real. And the words for it are awesome. Standing tall. Nothing's going to stand in my way. The duality for Nora and what she's trying to accomplish. And sometimes things just need a change. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. That was such a I watched it and I was like, this is so freaking epic. And what I love about it most is this show, it has the F's account on this show is at a complete overdraft. They have zero F's about what they're doing, how they're doing it, and why they're doing it.
But in the best way.
But in the best way. That's what I'm saying.
Like, they're saying, this is our craft. This is our show. And for all of you who are listening, like, you love this show. Right. But we're so few people who watch this show. If you didn't get to hear our interview with Damon Lindelof and Tom Parada, he was like, I think there's like 42 people who watch the show.
Actually, the number was 38.
Two of whom are you guys. And we were like, it's not that few, but it's definitely a little. Like, they know. But the people who watch this show love it, and we're ready to just continue to have our minds blown and to excite us and to push it because we are all in.
They're just doing what they
all
want.
All in. I'm so pumped.
And the thing I like about it is that when we spoke to Damon, he's like, listen, we don't feel like we're taking risks. We're just telling the story that we want to tell.
Yes.
And we have the benefit of not being a zeitgeisty kind of show like Lost, mm-hmm. even, you know,
we have to go back, Kate.
It's not Lost. It's not Westworld. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not The Walking Dead, even though I hate to admit the fact. I hate
to
admit the fact.
Say that swear word.
That the Walking Dead is anywhere on the level of Game of Thrones, but at least in popularity and numbers it is. But they're doing what they want, and they can do that because they don't have to meet the entirety of the world's expectations. They're just meeting their own expectations. I mean, they're changing the theme song. They're changing of the names of the writers listed on the credits. Then they're talking about doing the Wu-Tang Clan when people are jumping on a trampoline. And then putting Mark Lynn Baker on the show and talking about Perfect Strangers as if it's a real thing.
Zero
F's. Zero F's. And, you know, Lindelof did joke about 38 people watching the show. And it was funny, I will admit. But it pissed me off a little bit.
Oh.
It did. It pissed me off a little bit because obviously more than 38 people. It's probably more like 50. But no, but it
there's at least 5,000 of us.
Yeah, that's right.
There's at least that many.
The reason why it bugged me is because he's obviously very humble and he's very self-deprecating. And I appreciate that about Lindelof and Parada too. But what I wanted to say last week is that this show is just ahead of its time. It really is. I don't think people were ready
for
it at the time when it came out. You know, there were a lot of things that were happening at the time. President Obama had been reelected, and gay marriage had been made law throughout the land. Everyone had a healthcare system that seemed to make sense at the time. It all kind of made sense in this world. And now, in the world we live in today, the political climate, I'm not going to get into it because it's not worth it. But you who are watching and you who are listening right now, you know the political climate of this country and how things are going. Whether you agree with the president or not, you at least can see how the country is divided and how the country, like the people in The Leftovers, are ready to explode. That's what it feels like right now. And I feel like people are not only now starting to get into the mode of like, I could watch a show like this. Because as Lindelof said, it is not an inviting show. It is not a fun show by any stretch of the imagination. Even this past episode, even though it was relatively light mm-hmm. in some aspects, people were not ready for it.
No.
But you see things like Westworld. Westworld is a show, if you guys have watched it, not a fun show.
No, but it's ratings, all about shock value.
But the ratings are through the roof. Even shows like Bloodline, not a fun show, but people watch the hell out of that show. And people are not like, I feel like companies and channels and networks are doubling down on this kind of dark show. And Lindelof and Parada were the ones who took the chance and made it, I don't want to say first, but one of the first of its kind. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's ahead of its time?
Oh, I completely do. And that's why right now it's so important for people to tell their friends, like, hey, if you're not watching anything, you got to turn off Netflix and turn on HBO. You got to turn on HBO Go. You need to watch this show because it is that good. Right. I think it's going to be something that a lot of people watch after it's done. Just like all those artists, you know, who like they're dead and then people like their artwork. Way to go. Or, you know, or it's
happened
just
to Van Gogh.
No, it happens to so many people. So I think that's how it's going to be with The Leftovers, that it's going to become bigger as more people find out about it,
right,
and seeing how this season goes. But yeah, I've just been loving it. I don't know where you want to go from there.
Well, let's just talk about what I was speaking about earlier, which is Nora's identity.
Mm-hmm.
We talked earlier about The Nora episodes, Lens and Guest, and now we have this episode, Don't Be Ridiculous, and they're all about identity. At first, Nora was the DSD agent who was just going to do her job, and she goes into this hotel, and she loses her identity of Nora Durst for a little bit, and she kind of lives it out, but she realizes that Nora Durst, the identity of it, the name, it carries weight,
mm-hmm,
and she needs it, and she wants it. Even though she hugged Wayne and says, oh yeah, I've let it go and it's not that it didn't happen. She it was important to hold on to that. And in Lens, you know, she's in Miracle. She tries to get away from it all. She has her own nuclear family that she's created with Kevin and Jill and Lily, and they're all living in this house in Miracle, and they're trying to protect themselves from departing again, and everything seemed like a catch all, like this was all gonna make everything all better. And then all of a sudden, Nora didn't have Nora anymore. She was living her own life. And when somebody, namely Evie, disappears and happens to be the next door neighbor, now she's throwing rocks through people's windows because it's still following her. And she still has this notion of, I'm a lens. And she figures this out. And people around her are telling her, you are the problem for all of this. And now, in this episode, Lily is away. She only has Kevin. She doesn't have children. And she goes and she tries to find something and prove people wrong about the departure, the Dirty Santa, and Mark Lynn Baker meeting up with him. And she is trying her best to ruin these people's lives and ideas and expectations because she doesn't have anything else herself. She's trying to find out who she is because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked this episode because of that. I really feel like, the screens, you know, she's trying to touch it. It was almost like the world was preventing her from trying to get that grief back again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was almost like the gods were saying, no, you cannot go on this flight. And if you go on the flight, you're going to admit to the fact that you have a baby on your lap and you don't want to do that. So don't do that. And then when she tries to get to the GPS and she says, okay, take me to Eminence, Kentucky, it won't let her do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like the gods are saying, don't go here. You're just going to, nothing good is going to come out of you getting this grief back about Lily.
Or about your own children, about being a mother, about right, the identity of being a mother. And then you take it even further. She goes home to Kevin, who's suffocating himself. NBD, no big deal whatsoever. She just calmly sits down and is like, it's cool, man.
That's like, all right. That's
totally, like, totally
just
cool.
Just another day in the Gabi residence.
And of course he asks, he says, I would like to have a baby with you. And she just hysterically laughs,
mm-hmm,
and basically says, no, we're not going to F up what we have. What we have right now is great. But how incredible is that? This whole episode has been her being tormented. I shook the camera. I apologize. her being tormented that she currently doesn't have any children to mother.
Right. And who is she without children? Who is she without that grief? Who is she without being Nora cursed? Right. Even though she kind of, she derides that. She looks back on it and she laughs, but she secretly, well, not even secretly. She hates it, but she needs it at the same time. And when she's trying to touch these pads, it's almost like she isn't touching them. It's almost like nothing is being touched. You know what I mean? Like it's this person that is there, but isn't. And who is she if she's not Nora cursed? Who is she if she's not Nora Durst? You got to give it to them. And it took me a while to sit down with this and soak that all in. But when you start thinking about it in those terms of Nora trying to figure out who she is and where she is without Lily now, great stuff.
Is she cursed?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. And again, The Leftovers is now doing this to you. It's now saying, okay, you know, the curse, the lens thing, this whole radiation thing that Mark Lynn Baker is talking about, it's trying to tell you that seems ridiculous.
No, but she's going to do it. We know she does
but
it.
But now Nora's going to do it.
Yeah.
But is she doing it?
Because, yes.
Time out.
Yes.
Is she doing it?
Yes.
Okay. Is she doing it because she wants to prove everybody wrong? Or is she doing it because she just wants to see her kids again?
She wants to see her kids.
See, I don't know about that. I really don't know. And the reason why I don't know about that is because Nora has done everything in her power to tell people that they're wrong, that they're fakes. And that evidence exists right in this episode. It's with Dirty Santa. She does everything she can. Nothing is going to stand in her way to bring back our good song from The Perfect Strangers. Nothing's going to stand in her way to ruin people's lives and their identities because she's mad. And remember, Lindelof said this. She threw that rock in Erica's window because she was mad that her kids were gone and Nora's kids were departed.
Yep.
That to me is Nora Durst. That to me is putting up that picture just to piss people off. That's her second brick, right? That's the second brick through a window moment for Nora Durst. That is, I hate everybody. I don't care if we have to have a legacy. I don't care if my brother wants me to be cool with this. It's not going to happen. Are you going to dig him up or am I going to have to do it? She says to Matt. Mm-hmm. That to me says Nora's going to prove everybody wrong. And if it just so happens that maybe she sees her kids, hey, maybe that'll happen. Otherwise, she's going to get vaporized and then she's going to end it all anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what that says
well,
to me.
Well, I don't know. So see, I feel like the future Nora, Sarah, looked pretty messed up. Like she'd been around radiation. Mm-hmm. And like I've looked back at some photos of future Nora. Now, granted, I don't know how old future Nora, aka Sarah, is in that whole scene with the birds and the sister. And does the name Kevin mean anything to you? No, it does not. I don't know if I was supposed to look at her and say, whoa, she totally had radiation and it aged her and it really made her body look like it went through a lot, or if we're just supposed to think she's a lot older. But I'm now taking it that she does do something with radiation.
Yep.
So how do you feel about that?
I mean, it's possible. It's certainly possible. I don't know. She did look like she was pretty haggard in that future scene. So it's possible. But I don't know. I really don't know.
This episode really gave me a lot of tough, sad feelings. Like that frickin' is there an infant on your lap question.
Right.
And she couldn't even just push yes just to get over it. I mean, that was like, it haunts her. It haunts her so much. Nora can joke. Nora can act like she's chill and cool. Even Kevin says that. Doesn't he say like you're like the calmest person I know?
Yes.
No, she's not.
No, she's
Kevin.
Not. She's a freaking psycho.
She's a honey badger.
And she don't give a shit.
No.
She does not care. And speaking of Nora and Kevin, you know, they're giving off this notion that they're happy. And it kind of seems that way. But when you start looking at it deeper, you realize that they are anything but happy. I mean, the guy is trying to wrap his head around it in the bag, and he's doing whatever he's doing. Nora is breaking her arm on purpose.
Yes.
To hide a Wu-Tang Clan tattoo. Okay. But also, that was covering up the names of her children. That is not healthy. That's not healthy.
Can you even imagine
having
to break your arm? Like, everyone thought it was such a big deal when that guy who got stuck under a boulder, like, broke his arm off. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did actually, like, cut his arm off, didn't he? That's a much bigger deal than breaking your arm in a car door. But still, taking the emotional and physical strength to break your arm by closing your car door on it.
Right, right.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that, the determination
by yourself?
Ooh. Oh, yeah. No, I don't think so. You know what that reminds me? It reminds me of, do you remember Daredevil when Kingpin took the guy's head off and he's closing the door, spoiler alert, closing the door on the guy's neck and it cuts his head off?
No, I didn't really enjoy that. Oh, yeah. Now I do.
Now you remember that. But either way, I mean, she is now going to Australia. And the fact that they're going to Australia, not because of Kevin, but because of Nora. Oh, sorry, rookie mistake there. Because of Nora, how cool is that?
I didn't see that coming.
Like, that is a subversion of expectations, and I have a theory on this, and I'm going to save that for the sudden theory of the week. But that is a good subversion of expectations that I did not expect. And it makes you wonder the role that Nora is going to play with Kevin and for Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Going forward in Australia. And now, are we going to end up in Australia for the next episode? I don't know. But I will say that since we were in Miracle for at least two episodes,
Miracle.
I appreciate that. It reminded me of season two when we were in Mapleton for like the first first episode.
Mm-hmm.
After, of course, you know, when we met the Murphys, we got the second episode and we were in Mapleton and we were like, okay, cool, that's where they were. Now they're moving on to Jarden. I got that same feeling of, okay, that's where we were in Miracle, but now the story demands that we go to Australia. That to me is good way to intermingle and connect all the storylines. And the fact that we're getting all of these other people who were in previous seasons, George Brevity, the man that is now apparently Nora's supervisor, was the guy that she stole the papers from during Lens.
Okay.
That's George Brevity.
Yes.
And we have now, oh, by the way, Misunderstood Genius. I just have to play this for you.
Bam. What did you call?
A winner.
It wasn't me. I didn't call it.
I called something.
You are the Misunderstood Genius.
Yes.
You called that Christine took the baby, and
I did.
She was back.
Oh my God, I was so excited. I was so proud of myself. And she had another baby, so girlfriend has decided to become a family woman.
Right.
And she wants her first baby back. Had a custody battle.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't even really a battle. She showed up, and Nora decided, okay, I'm just going to give the kid away.
Yeah.
Because it's the right thing to do. And it is the right thing to do. Because it's her child, even though Kevin and she adopted Lily, who has now been renamed, by the way, and I have a theory about this too, who has now been renamed, no longer recognizes Nora as her mother. Nora wants this to, like, it feels to me, again, like Nora's identity. Nora wanted to give Lily away because she wanted that identity of not having children. She still wants to be Nora cursed. That's how it feels to me. But seeing Christine back again, a really great callback to season one. I love how they're bringing everybody back.
Yes.
And it's showing that this is a complete and cohesive
story.
Yes, they had the soft reboot in season two, and they're kind of having a soft reboot in season three. Laurie is married to John. Jill is in college. Tommy is a cop. You know, it's I don't want to say reboot. Reboot's an ugly word. But it's just like a rejiggering again. Mm-hmm. It's taking the people that you know and then flipping them backwards a little bit.
Just remaking new families, too. I mean, these are families. This is what the show is about. And You mentioned Tommy, and I feel like we can't pass up the fact how his little story that he told Nora mm-hmm. about he was adopted at 3, and he just wished they never told him that Kevin wasn't his father.
Right. Crazy.
And then he drops the bomb on Nora when she's like, yeah, well, you know what I wish? I wish you never gave me Lily. And he was like, yeah, I didn't. I didn't even know who you were. I gave Lily to my dad.
Yeah, like what a slap in the face.
And mic drop and leaves. And that's what then pushed her over. Like, think about that. You remember seeing her crazy face when she picked up the baby?
Yes.
Just holding that baby like, look what I found. crazy Nora. But, for him to say, like, that baby wasn't even intended for you.
Right, that wasn't even yours. I didn't even know you existed.
Yeah.
And that also speaks to her mindset too a little bit, which is this baby was meant for me. And she just assumes that it was meant for her, but it really wasn't. It's a little narcissistic to mm-hmm. think about it like that. You know, and Preston Young here in the Facebook chat, he's saying, how could Nora not want to give Lily back to Nora? That's her mother. Back to Christine. That's her mother. Yes, I agree. In all seriousness, that makes sense. That's the birth mother. But she abandoned the baby.
Yes, in a bathroom.
And Kevin and Nora legally adopted her.
Yes.
That is their child now. That is it. So I understand why Nora did it. If, however, she wanted to fight that, she has every legal reason and every legal right to do so. Mm-hmm. And guess what? She'd probably win. She'd more than likely win in my eyes. So I do wonder, though, now that we're speaking about this, Tommy, do you think Tommy's putting her in her place a little bit?
Yes.
I think he's putting her in her place a little bit, too.
He's like, listen, Miss Big Deal, I know that you were Nora cursed in this Mapleton.
Yeah.
You're just Nora here. So stop freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
And by the way, don't go visit Christine again. Don't go visit not Lily
yeah.
again, because that's effing creepy.
Christine really kept her cool.
She's like, hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I think I'd be like, bro, scram. Go right? get your shine box, okay? Because that's not what's going to happen with me.
So Nora comes home
yep.
and finds Kevin trying to suffocate himself. He tears the bag off and says, oh, I tear the bag off every time. I don't want to die. And she says it's okay.
Because she understands. She knows what it's
yes.
like.
Yes. But how crazy. Greg Johnson even commented on Facebook. Like, how absolutely crazy was that? He said that whole moment and scene between them when she walked in and just everything about how broken she is. And still, it was just so powerful in this episode. So, you know, that scene... I am just over and over amazed by Kevin and Nora's relationship.
Right.
I mean, even when they're going and collecting Dirty Santa's stuff and she starts joking with John because she feels like, so you could see with Kevin in this episode, he's kind of into the book.
Right.
He's kind of into it. He's like, oh man, I really hope she doesn't hurt it. Like, she put the book down. Like, we're good. And John, of course, comes over and she's like, hey, John, read your book. It was by the toilet. It's great stuff. And Kevin was kind of like, why'd you do that? She's like, if we can't laugh about this.
Don't badmouth the book.
Yeah. If we can't laugh about this, then the one. And I loved that. Like, she adds this lightheartedness, but then you see an episode like this and you're reminded about Nora and Guest
right.
and Lens, and you're reminded that this woman is unhinged.
And so
a little bit.
Speaking of unhinged, I almost felt like she was going to go off on my boy Macklin Baker. I thought she was going to go off when she met him in the hotel. And you kind of felt like she wanted to. You kind of felt like, oh, she's gonna give him the business here a little bit. And she did a little bit. She's trying to tell him that, obviously, as you heard at the beginning of this episode, that I just think that you're delusional and you're suicidal.
Yeah.
And this is all a joke. This is all something that people are just trying to take advantage of you. I don't care if it's in Switzerland. I don't care if they've made this machine. Even if they have, it's probably just gonna eviscerate people and just kill them immediately, instantly, not send them to the departure area. And even if it did send them to the departure area, you can't prove it. You can't prove it. So the fact that they had Mark Lynn Baker on is actually really cool. And Lindelof actually spoke about how they got him back on the show too. And Lindelof said, I had just seen the movie The Fly with Jeff Goldblum. And I was like, what if there was, whether we actually ever show this thing or not, what if someone tells Nora that Jeff Goldblum has basically built this device that she can get into, which would transport her to be with her kids again? Nora, of course, would be very reluctant to believe that this thing is true. It sounds like it's a con, and that is what the business of Nora is in. Mm-hmm. And we could present that idea to her through a non-traditional source, like Mark Lynn Baker, a perfect stranger, and make it seem like it's a legitimate thing. So ultimately, the reason we go to Australia is not Kevin, but Nora. And you would expect that it would be Kevin because of his father is down there. So he's actually going to Australia because he's a part of her mission as opposed to the other way around. And he continues by saying, we were always tickled by the idea of that it feels silly and ridiculous when it first was pitched. And we all laughed. And then we looked at each other. We said, okay, but what if actually did that? Mm-hmm. What if we actually got Mark Lynn Baker on the show? and he says, and in the case of Mark Lynn Baker, it felt again like something that the show had been setting up, even as a running gag over the first couple of seasons. So the running gags are great because they're bringing back Gary Busey. Now they're bringing back Mark Lynn Baker, and they're making them organic parts to the plot and to the drama of what the show is trying to accomplish. And then he says, I felt like something that show had been setting up for the running gag over the first couple of seasons, but comedy, of course, comes in threes. It's a trilogy. What if Mark Lynn Baker is off having his show that we're not watching, where he is on his journey, and could that potentially collide with our show? Mm-hmm. And knowing that Mark Lynn Baker is this comedic actor who really hasn't done a whole ton of dramatic work, but seeing his performance, the guy killed it.
He did. He completely nailed it.
It made me believe that he really believed that mm-hmm. he was going to be with his three cohorts.
Yes.
You know, from the Perfect Strangers. The guy nailed it. Mm-hmm. And I got to admit, when I first saw it, I was like, oh my God! First, the man has not aged well, and oh my God, is he really going to be able to handle this kind of scene? We've all seen what Carrie Coon can do in episodes like Lens when she's talking with Regina King. Can he hold that weight of that conversation with Carrie Coon? And he did it not only in spades, but he stole the scene.
Yep.
Stole the scene in my eyes completely. Totally. 100% just knocked it out of the park. Do you agree?
I do. That's why
you're sitting quiet. Like
I know, because I'm agreeing and I'm trying to think if there's anything that I can say that sounds just as good, because that's completely right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. How'd you feel about her seeing Erica?
First of all, I never expected to like a Wu-Tang Clan song in this show so much.
Yes.
At first when I heard it, I was kind of like, okay, where are we going with this? But just hearing it.
It worked.
Jumping
on that trampoline.
And having the conversation between the two, it wasn't as heady as Lens, but it didn't need to be. It just needed to be a cathartic moment for Laura and for Nora. You needed to get that Nora cursed.
I had Regina King leg envy. Girlfriend has awesome legs.
So does Carrie Coon, BT
Yes,
Dubs.
She does. Yes, she does, but Regina was wearing a romper, and I was like, if I jumped on a trampoline, maybe my legs would look like that, because they looked good. My gosh. I'm just like girl crushing, because yes, both of their bodies were amazing. Jumping on trampolines, that's very cathartic. I should probably get a trampoline.
We have a trampoline.
I would not fit on that one.
It's our son's trampoline.
That was really great, you know, and we don't know where Erica is. Her house looked really nice.
Right.
She's obviously like moving on. And she believes Evie is dead, whereas John does not. So that's probably why they broke up.
Yep.
John thinks that Evie's pulling a prank again, or hiding, or doing something. And Erica is facing facts that she believes that her daughter, is dead. I buried her. You know, like we're done. So I liked it. I liked that there was a little mom time.
It makes me wonder though, and something that I was thinking about during this episode, and now that we know that we're going to go to Australia, is this the last that we're going to see of all of these people? Like, is everyone going to travel to Australia with Kevin and Nora? Are we going to have a split story between Jarden and Australia? Or is that the last we're going to see of Jill, you know, in the first episode? Is that the last we're going to see of Mary in the first episode? Is that the last we're going to see of Erica? Mm-hmm. Right? Is this the last we're going to see of John? That also is,
I felt
is
like
hovering.
That was my goodbye with Erica.
You think so?
I think we're done with Erica.
Yeah.
I think she was there to show I'm okay. And I'm okay, but I've had to leave the family circle because they're all a little effed up.
Right.
And Erica's moving on. But this kind of core group, I don't think we're done with John.
I don't think so yet either. I think he might be going to Australia too. I think he might be. Because mm-hmm. he's going to want to tag along to see
to write the help write the book of Kevin,
the book of yes. Kevin, right? So, and Matt probably will tag along as well. That's mm-hmm. probably my guess.
Let's talk about the name Kevin. Who knew the name Kevin was so popular for police officers? That guy was a jerk.
And chiefs of police, nonetheless.
Jerk Kevin.
Jerk
that's what
Kevin.
I'm going to call him. Jerk Kevin.
We're going to call him Dead Kevin from now on.
Yeah, that's
or,
who he
or
is.
Or Soggy Kevin.
He's Soggy. That's his Wu-Tang name. Yes. Soggy Kevin. So Soggy Kevin, we get set up knowing he's just a jerk because he hates on his friend, his coworker, who has a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And his poor dog is sick, and he's just like, whatever, you can't leave. You're not married.
Yep. Sorry.
Jerk. It's just jerk, Soggy Kevin. And then these four women who reminded me so much of like the four women in the car. You know the scene, sweatpants scene.
Yeah.
Y'all know that scene.
But things were flopping.
Got to know Justin a little too well.
Like I said, the first season, Jennifer Aniston is a lucky gal.
So we had
quite
we
the
had
lucky
those people.
Gal.
What did they even shout to him when he was out for a jog? This was before the departure. Mm-hmm. They were all in the car and they're like, are you ready? They were all wearing white, I think. And that's what these four women on horseback kind of reminded me of.
Yep.
Just ladies knowing something that's going on, being a little psychic. And Grace kept being asked, is this the right one? Are you sure it was Soggy Kevin and not Hot Kevin? I mm-hmm. think it was supposed to be Tattooed Kevin, not Soggy Kevin, but we'll see where it goes. So,
You're not Tattoo Kevin? You're not floppy pants
oh,
Kevin?
God. Floppy is such a terrible word.
it's the truth. I can't help the truth.
Tattooed Kevin.
Well, listen.
So they catch Soggy Kevin.
A lot of people have been saying that these women are the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
What does that even mean? Am I supposed to know what that is? Is this like a biblical thing I didn't learn in church school?
Oh my gosh.
I didn't read the scary chapters of the Bible. Was this what's happening?
Yes, that.
I skipped that whole thing. No
that's
way.
That's Revelations.
I don't need to know. I don't need to know.
Oh my God, I don't know how you don't know the four horsemen.
Because I didn't like being told the world is going to end during my time.
Right.
I am all set. And if it's going to end, hopefully Jesus looks down and says, you're very sweet. You're Gryffindor, right? And you have nice freckles. Like, you've been a nice person. You may not know these horse people or anything, but that's okay, Mary. You tried.
Yes.
A for effort.
You know.
Wait, so what is this four horsemen?
It's not entirely relevant, and the reason why I say it's not because I don't believe it.
Okay,
I think it's just
okay.
I just think that is, to be honest, it could be a red herring. In my opinion, that's what it feels like. But also, it just feels like a bunch of stuff that people are making up. You know, that's the way that it feels to me.
Okay, but nonetheless, in Australia, they know a chief of police, Kevin.
Right.
They're supposed to do something with him, and then out pops his dad, who was chief of police.
Mm-hmm.
So are they looking for him or are they looking for Tattoo Kevin?
Because the real chief of police, that's old Kevin, Kevin Sr., mm-hmm. acknowledges them and says, hey, what are you guys doing? Like, what's going on? And the reason why they talk to Wu-Tang Kevin is because they want to drown him to see he's gonna be alive.
He's not going
to
die.
So they're looking for Kevin Jr. here. They're looking for him.
Yeah.
And it seems like they have an affiliation with Kevin Sr. It seems like they know each other.
Okay.
The other question I want to bring
up, too. I just wondered how he came out of Police Chief Soggy Kevin's house. Are these guys roommates? Or why does everyone live near each other in Australia?
The other question I want to bring up, too, is this in the future? Or is this in the present? Because some people have said that they were quoting the book of Kevin when they were talking to Soggy Kevin. And that may be the truth. I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't get the exact thing. The other thing I liked too was that they mentioned October 15th as opposed to October 14th on the newscast in Australia.
Because of
the time jump.
The world spins.
That's right. So something didn't necessarily happen on the 14th in Australia because the 14th had already come and gone. They were now into the 15th.
Correct.
And we were still in the United States on the 14th.
Yes. That was really cool.
I like that thing. You know, ultimately, the Mark Lynn Baker stuff really, really, really worked for me.
Okay.
It brought on a whole nother meta level of trying to take control. Nora is trying to take control of her life. She's going to see Christine. She's taking yellow freaking shovels from kids and just bagging on and being like, that's not yours. She's trying to reach Lily, I'm going to call her Not Lily from now on. She's trying to reach Not Lily. And Mark Lynn Baker is doing the same exact thing. He's just trying to take his life back. Mm-hmm. First, he started by faking his departure, going to Mexico, getting caught and found out.
Loved that, yeah.
But now he's trying to go see all of his coworkers again. Mm-hmm. He's just trying to take his life back. And it makes you realize how similar Mark Lynn Baker and Nora really are. Three of his closest colleagues disappeared.
Yeah.
Nora's three closest colleagues, her family, disappeared. And, you know, they're talking about all this, you know, they've both done the things to get away from the departure, to fake it, to move on from it, but it keeps coming back at them. It keeps eating at them, both of them. They both have this 1 in 128,000th chance of this really happening to them, and it happened. And Mark Lynn Baker is just a mirror for Nora. What can happen if you get into that situation?
Well, no, just I feel like it was making her remember. God, what was the phrase that they said that was like written on the Guilty Remnants wall? Didn't they have a phrase? And someone actually said it in this episode. And I feel like Nora has tried to be so lighthearted and kind of forget and move on. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it down in my notes because Nora became the GR a bit for me in this episode.
Oh, especially when she was sitting watching the videos, smoking a cigarette, wearing a white robe. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. The imagery there was fantastic.
Oh, my God. What? I wrote it down, but something was said, and I was like, that was one of the quotes on the Guilty Remnants wall. Like, that was one of their things that they stood for. But, yeah, he's helping her remember. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't forget this. So,
right.
Yeah. Love it.
And so, the last thing I want to say is Nora just taking that damn gate and opening it up and freaking out on that person being like, I paid the effing ticket before. Yeah. And you know, we've all wanted to do that. We've all been in that situation.
Oh, pushing where, a gate.
Pushing a gate. Like, yes. We've all been in that situation where people are beeping at you, and like you're in the parking garage, and the thing is not reading your credit card, and you're like, what the hell, guy? All I wanted, and the person has to come over, and they got to hit the button, and they got to, like, that sucks. I'm so proud of her for wanting to do that.
I find out what it was.
Okay, what is it?
I'm just wasting my breath.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And didn't someone say, like,
well, it says don't waste your breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what those are the signs they hold up.
Yes, yes.
At Memorial Day. Yeah, yeah, don't waste your breath.
Yep. Sorry.
Anything else, my love? Sorry.
No, because I saved something for my my sudden theory of the week. I actually saved something.
Oh my God.
I'm so proud of myself.
I can't call you that, my love, by the way. Anything else?
What's my name?
Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Preach.
Is there anything else that you want to get into listener feedback?
Of course I do.
Let's do it. All right. On Facebook, Russell McVicker says, 5+ Damons, this was Nora's international assassin story, but even better. Now, listen, Russell, I appreciate this story, but I will not say that this was better than an international assassin. I really liked it, but I can't go that far. Melissa Schmidt Ducat says, it was great seeing Nora lose control. For her, the departure was very real. And to see Dirty Santa's very real death be treated like a departure because his legacy deserves it, in quotes, is like a knife in the heart, in my opinion. Especially coming from her own brother, which makes sense. That coupled with the phone call about seeing her kids, the kiosk not letting her choose another option for the infant lap sitting thing, seeking out Lily really made all the shittiness of her situation front and center. I also think that seeing Kevin with the bag on his head actually made her feel good, or if not good, some level of comfort. And Melissa, oh my goodness.
Just like that. A winner!
Yes, 100% she took comfort out of that. She's not the only one to go through the motions while trying to hold it all together. Now, I'm going to go on. I'm not going to jump on the four horsemen or the four horsewomen. I don't know how I feel about them getting the wrong guy, other than to set it up the fact that they know about Kevin in some way, shape, or form. But it's starting to feel like, holy shit, this apocalypse thing may actually be happening. Now, she's going to get real. Real Battlestar Galactica on us.
Okay.
We have to go back, Kate.
Oh, no, that's the wrong sound.
So say we all.
There we go.
Got you.
But just hear me out for a second. What if all this happened before and all of this will happen again? What if we just cycle through to the next apocalypse and people are left to tell the tale of what got us there just to do it all over again?
The leftovers hurts my brain.
So she wants to say that she hopes that you're feeling better.
I am feeling better.
Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Thank you, Melissa.
Suzanne Marone Carew says, for Damons, it was terrific that it answered many questions on how Nora broke her arm, where is Lily, and why is Kevin asphyxiating himself. It offered insight into people's motivations. Matt saying, of course, Dirty Santa earned his legacy, even though it was not true. And it was also moved the plot right along, revealing how we get to Australia. It was also a stark reminder that the show is centered around grief, you know, just in case if anyone had forgotten that.
Yeah.
Victoria Swift Christie says, so many answers tonight. It was a little cheap with the Lily story. And I
guys, that was my idea. I pitched it to the writers, remember?
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
You deserve a second sound there. You really do. But seeing Brett Butler, Perfect Strangers, and Wu-Tang made this 30-year-old smile. Watching the wrong Kevin die was heartbreaking, but hey, you can't go around killing kangaroos and getting away with it.
I didn't feel too bad for him.
No, I didn't feel too bad. He was just a dink. That's all that. At Fletch Topper says, the biggest jaw-dropping moment was when Nora went to Kentucky to see formerly Lily, otherwise known as Not Lily. Not a bad episode, however, just fairly straightforward. I'm not sure if I agree with that. I think it was, there's a lot of good subtext in this episode. At The Gearson says, okay, so did Australia happen 7 years into the future after something happened on an October 15th or down there? The 14th was always the 15th.
14 was the 15th just because of the way the world spins.
Correct. At Blown Away 2 says, one suggestion, no more dry cleaning. It is time for Kevin and Nora to do their own dirty laundry.
Ah, snap.
Yes, it is. And at Daphne MCW says, 3.5 Damons because Australia felt like a sharp left turn from the right lane.
Ooh.
And, you know, I kind of agree with her on this one. I'm not going to lie. And at Sarah McClellan says, looks like you might have been right, Mary, about
everything.
The bikes. She put in a picture and the bikes are very similar.
Nora likes blue bikes.
So, you know what? I'm just going to play it again.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Doesn't happen that frequently, so thank you.
All right, you ready for some voicemails?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Fletcher Teal calling from Atlanta, Georgia. I wanted to give my thoughts on episode 2 of season 3 that aired this past week. First of all, let me say how much I enjoy the podcast and how much I'm actually looking forward to this season. This is the first season I'm watching episode by episode as opposed to binging it, and I'm excited that I'll be able to be involved with the conversations with you guys in the podcast. My initial reaction after watching the Nora-centric episode is this. Is Nora now the focus of The Leftovers? This might be a bit of a stretch to think, especially considering that in the first season we saw 2 character episodes in the Matt Jameson episode and our first Nora episode, but consider this. The first episode of season 3 was essentially all Kevin, and it almost seemed to wrap up his story. He's back as a police chief. He's hanging out with people that we've known for a while. There's that one crazy thing about the book of Kevin, and sure, we get that last scene of Nora/Sarah being asked about him at the end, but for the most part, it seems that Kevin's story is pretty much wrapped up. He wouldn't even be going to Australia, it seems, if it weren't for Nora. So I think from here on out, while yes, we will still get events happening to and around Kevin, I think Nora is now the focus of The Leftovers. One quick thought, how awesome was it to see Erica again? She was maybe my favorite member of the new family, maybe my favorite member of season 2 overall. Mm-hmm. Love her actress as well, whose name is escaping me as I'm talking, leaving this message.
Regina King.
But it was so great to see her. And a bit of a spoiler warning, I was listening to an interview with Damon Lindelof, and it pretty much confirmed that this is the last that we will see of Erica. But with the show focusing its shift to Australia, that's probably not that much of a stretch. Also, one last final thought. Who would have ever thought that Nora and Erica would be friends after the relationships that we saw building last season? They hated each other, and towards the end it seemed like Kevin and John might become friends, but I actually kind of buy the Erica and Nora relationship. I'm going to miss it a lot, but I'm glad we got that one final scene with them that concluded on the trampoline. Anyway, thanks for taking my thoughts. Hope this makes you guys think a little bit. Looking forward to the rest of the show, the rest of the podcast. Really bummed we only have 6 episodes left, and I can't wait to see what show you guys are going to cover next. As soon as The Leftovers ends, you got to pick a show that I can start watching because I'm going to miss Mary and Blake in my life. All right, that's it from Atlanta. And by the way, yes, I'm still salty over the Super Bowl. I'm actually wearing my Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl shirt. No Atlanta way to lose, no more Brady way to win. Enjoy it, but it won't stop me from listening to the podcast. That's it. Thank you so much, and looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say.
You know what? Thank you so much for calling in. You brought the phone call. That was a great message, but this one's for you.
Why? Oh my God, you are so mean.
Because, you know what? I'm just going to say that I'm sorry that you're an Atlanta Falcons fan. That's all I'm going to say. And it felt good.
You are making people hate the Pats fans even more.
That's okay. I don't mind. They already hate us. You know what? Get in line.
Damon
get in
hates
line.
You.
Yeah, Damon does hate me for that.
Damon is not a Pats fan.
We already confirmed that.
Yeah.
But 28-3, bro. I appreciate
that. Just move on. Thank you for your voicemail.
No. Actually, you brought that phone call. Thank you, Fletcher. That was great.
The last episode was pretty legit. It was a Nora episode. But anyway, I thought it was kind of cool, her catching Kevin, like, suffocating himself. It's almost like it was catching him watching porn, like Kevin had been teasing Michael about in the last episode. Also, I think that, at the end, when the 4 horsewomen were talking about the Book of Kevin as if they read it, I think in that moment when Kevin was talking to Michael about watching porn, that Michael was posting the book on the internet. Also, I think Matt Cancer is back. I don't know if anybody remembers on season 1. He was talking about how he had cancer when he was a kid. I think it was leukemia. I don't know. But I thought it was weird he had a nosebleed. And I don't think that was, like, there on accident. Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. First, thank you for calling in.
Yes.
Always please tell us your name and where you're from. We always love to know where people are calling from. But Spunky Misunderstood Genius.
Yes.
Your thoughts.
The Matt thing also reminded me about Matt and Nora's story of their parents being burned alive in their house and him saying, don't worry, they can't feel anything or whatever. They're already in heaven. Wow. Yeah. Ooh.
Sometimes a nosebleed is just a nosebleed. Unless it's the leftovers, where a nosebleed is a lot more than just a nosebleed. So that is a great idea.
Can Matt leave Miracle?
Hey, Mary Ann Blake. This is Preston from Montgomery, Alabama. I was calling to chime in with my daemons for this week's episode, Don't Be Ridiculous. I'm so glad the leftovers is back, and I tweeted at you, and I meant it. This is exactly what I come to the leftovers for. This is a 5 out of 5 episode. It goes back to the other Nora episodes that we had in seasons 1 and 2 in Guest. It was all about Nora kind of trying to stifle her grief and try and push it under, whereas in Lens, we saw that she was really kind of angry that people were trying to hijack her grief. And I feel like in this episode, we get the beautiful combination of somebody trying to hijack her grief and her trying to cover up her grief. And they're just not really being an out for her. And I really love the idea that Nora and Kevin are keeping secrets from one another, which is something that they said at the beginning of season 2 that they were not going to do anymore. And so I'm just so fascinated with what's going on this season, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say when you reheat the leftovers. Anyway, I love you guys. You do a great job with the podcast, and I'm just excited for more leftovers to come. Yay. You guys have a great day.
I love this idea that he brought up, Preston brought up, about them keeping secrets from each other.
Mm-hmm.
They did promise never to do that, and that's all they're doing now.
That's it.
She will not tell Kevin that she met with Macklin Baker. Like, I feel like if that happened to me, I would do that. And telling him, hey, we're going to Australia because of X, Y, and Z. Like, of these people may be able to get me back to my kids again. Again, I'm not sure if she really believes that, but regardless, that he's not telling her that he's putting bags over his head. It's scary between the two, because I always considered her TV's best girlfriend. She was always TV's best girlfriend in my heart. And I'm not sure if I can go forward with that claim.
This is Rafe Collins Jr. Hi guys. I think this episode is a further exploration between the tension between belief and doubt. And what I can't understand is why, you know, Kevin and Nora are both inscrutable. Like, in the way they think, especially Kevin, you know, after everything that's happened to him, he's still trying to process things in a normal way. And so is Nora. And I have no idea why. Like why? You know, and there's this, I feel like there's this thread of, you know, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for everything, you know. In the last episode, there was you saw John, you know, being fed answers, you know, reading poems or whatever. You know, well, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for everything except that there isn't, like the departure. So, you know, I see them exploring that tension even more, and I that really sticks in my craw. That these people can't, that they can only think of things in one way, it seems like. Love you guys. Great live show. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. We love you too.
Seriously, these voicemails are kicking butt.
Killing it this year.
I am loving it. Thank you.
Mary, Blake, and the rest of the Living Reminders, it's Brian Davids from the Film Schlubs podcast, and I'm thrilled to be back for another Thought of the Week. First off, what an amazing episode. It was basically Guest 2.0, as we saw more of Nora's travel experiences gone awry, while the universe put countless obstacles in her path to prevent her from doing what she was about to do. It's also a Nora Durst greatest hits record, as we got to see every side of the character that we've seen throughout the series. There were several scenes that felt like sequels to previous Nora scenes in the series. However, for the most part, Season 3 Nora has devolved into a version of herself that we haven't really seen since Season 1. By no means was Season 2 Nora reborn, but she had Lily, as well as a new family with Kevin and Jill, plus a false sense of security that she longed for upon buying a home in Miracle. Most of all, she finally had hope that everything could be okay, only Season 3 has already proven that everything is not okay, despite the tough exteriors that Nora and Kevin both have. I also said the word devolve because Nora boasted to Erica in Lens how she had evolved past her pathetic behavior that we saw in Season 1, only Erica sensed the hypocrisy in Nora. And like I predicted last week, losing Lily to Christine has impacted her just as much as her own kids' departures. One could argue that the loss of Lily is worse because Nora will always know that Lily is still out there. And while Nora will always remember Lily, Lily will not remember Nora, something their brief reunion proved. As Nora drove away from the park crying, the brilliant Max Richter was still playing his quiet piano rendition of the Perfect Strangers theme, because Lily and Nora, at this point, are nothing but perfect strangers. But much like Season 1 Nora, she is now testing the limits of what she can get away with, such as smoking in a non-smoking room, lying to Kevin and her boss about the purpose of her St. Louis trip, lying to everyone, including her doctor and Erica, about her broken arm, or pushing the parking barrier up to flee the parking lot. In Mapleton, she had the town's sympathy to where she could get away with things like pushing a coffee cup off a table. But in Season 3, she's just another person, and she's treated as such, just like she was when her identity was taken away from her at the conference in Season 1's Guest. In both Guest and Don't Be Ridiculous, Nora is tempted with something that could relieve her pain over her children. The temptation in Guest was the chance to feel better via a hug from Holy Wayne, a healer of sorts. Oddly enough, the most relieving part of Don't Be Ridiculous for Nora was when she visited Erica, whom she's now close friends with. So what was the first thing Erica did? She hugged Nora. And what is Erica's occupation? Doctor. So the comparison to Guest is most apt in this scene, since Nora received hugs from two very different types of healers. Subsequently, the conversation between Nora and Erica is an example of what I meant by a scene that functions as a sequel to a previous scene. In this case, it's that famous scene from Lens between Erica and Nora as they're again talking about the loss of their children, only a lot has changed since the last time we got to see them do this. However, Wu-Tang Trampoline was a nice departure from anything we've seen before on this series, as it just felt good to see these two smiling again. But back to the subject of temptation. In Season 3, Nora is also tempted with the possibility of seeing her kids again, as Mark Lynn Baker led her to a random hotel room in St. Louis where he pitches the idea of zapping her to wherever her kids went. At first, the radiation gizmo seemed absurd, but when you consider other things that this world has presented in order to relieve people's pain, it's no longer that far-fetched. People buy lifelike dolls of their departed loved ones, hugs from supposed holy figures, or real estate in a town that claims to be departure-proof. They also buy into the idea of a silent smoking cult that only wears white, so this seems like a logical next step in this world, and one that Nora seems to be considering after walking in on her partner, who's also flirting with suicide in his own unique way and is just as secretly unhappy as she is. When Kevin asked to have a baby with Nora, she laughed in his face, which reminded me of the time that Matt told Nora about her husband's affair in Season 1. She also laughed in Matt's face, but keep in mind she had just told Matt to let go of everything he believed in at the time. So the Jameson siblings have shown a vindictive pattern of destroying people's faith or hope, including their own. Nora is now doing the same to the Pillar Man's wife, Sandy, and those who wanted to believe in the Pillar Man's made-up departure, including her brother, Matt. If Nora can't move on, let go, or have the smallest bit of hope, then no one can. This is similar to Matt's behavior in Season 1, as he couldn't let people think the rapture had taken place. So he dug up dirt on the departed to prove that many of the people who did depart weren't worthy of the rapture. This upset many people, just like Nora upset Sandy. So the big question is Nora going to Australia to zap herself or bust the Swiss physicist? Normally, I would have answered the latter without a second's hesitation, but then I saw her reaction to Kevin with a bag around his head. The one commitment, the one anchor that she has in her life, which she brought up to Marklin Baker, is a complete mess right now. So it remains to be seen, but given the prologue that shows the world not ending, as well as the flash forward, which shows an older Nora, it's likely that she did not go through with the radiation zap, nor did the world end. Did Kevin stop her? Did he do it in place of her because he knows he can come back? Well, that's it for this week's Thought of the Week. You guys can find more of me, Brian Davids, on Twitter at BDF331, as well as filmschlubspodcast.com, as I just interviewed Better Call Saul's Vince Gilligan and Jennifer Hutcheson. Well, thanks again to Mary and Blake, and to you, the audience, for listening.
You ready for the sudden theory? Are you ready to give up your sudden theory?
So what's the difference between sudden theory and final thoughts?
Sudden theory is the theory, and the final thought is just your final thoughts for the episode altogether.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yes, I'm ready for my sudden theory of the week.
She's reading on notes, and she's like...
Well, I wanted to know the difference, because I only have like one nugget that I've saved that I need to get off my chest, and I don't know where to put it. Okay. Sudden... But you go first. You do your sudden theory.
Okay. Two thoughts. One, Lily... Not Lily. Her new name is Sarah. Guaranteed. Put it on the books. That is a guarantee. We're going to find out Lily's new name is Sarah.
Ugh.
And that's why Nora's name is Sarah.
Because she can't cover that in a Wu-Tang tattoo. Which, P.S., people have been saying, and I totally am agreeing, if you look at the main image for The Leftovers this season, which kind of looks like angel wings,
right,
and Nora's coming from behind Kevin,
right,
totally is the Wu-Tang logo. You know, she also said, oh, I thought it would look like a phoenix. Like, look at the wings, and it totally is like the Wu-Tang logo.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen.
Okay, so Sarah is not Lily.
Sarah is not Lily. And not Nora is Sarah.
Yes.
Okay.
Fletcher
did steal my thunder a little bit for my second thought.
Okay.
Okay. So, Fletcher, great voicemail. Thank you very much, even though you're an Atlanta Falcons fan.
We'll forgive you. I forgive you. Blake doesn't forgive about that.
I'm sorry for you. I'm just sorry. That's what happens. What if the show and Lindelof and Parada were pulling a rope-a-dope with us the entire time?
A rope-a-dope. What are these phrases?
It's
what,
you know, Muhammad Ali fighting George Foreman. He was on the,
I love his grill.
You know, he was.
I love his grill. I make spinach pies on it all the time. Thank you, George.
George Foreman is one of the most famous boxers of all the time. And you say, I like his grill.
I do.
You know?
Panini press. That's what I use it for. I don't even cook meat on it. He would die.
Muhammad Ali is on the ropes, and he's letting George Foreman go to town on him left and right, and he gets tired, and finally at the end Ali comes up and just gives him, boom, hits him once, and he knocks him out at the end.
Okay.
That's called the rope-a-dope.
No idea, but sure. Okay. So you're saying,
so what if Lindelof and Parada gave us a rope-a-dope this entire time, and
like they're distracting us?
The main character is not Kevin.
Yeah.
The main character are not the Garveys or the Murphys. The main character this entire time has been Nora.
Yeah.
And the reason why I think that is because the show is now propelling itself to Australia because of Nora.
Mm-hmm.
And we see in the final move, the final scene of the first episode, Nora in Australia not recognizing who Kevin is. What if this whole story has been Nora's story and not Kevin's?
That would be an amazing theory.
That is the rope-a-dope.
Are you ready for mine?
Spunky misunderstood genius. What is yours? What's your sudden theory? I think this is your first sudden theory since
ever.
Since like episode 102.
Okay. So last episode, I was saying that Dean and the dogs, they're just leading us down this labyrinth that it's not really going to matter. Even though the peanut butter thing was definitely dropped earlier with Kevin Sr. being obsessed with peanut butter and even leaving money in a peanut butter jar. But I was like, maybe that's just whatever. So, fun fact, guys, I had to watch this episode through bits and pieces because I was in New York and then I've come back. I started to watch a little bit of it and then my kids were trying to nap and they were trying to nap and I didn't want to have the volume up. So I turned on the subtitles and had the volume up just a smidge. Beautiful harp music in this piece, by the way. But you want to know what is inside closed captions on this show?
Yes.
Dogs barking. All the time. Like, I've watched these past two episodes with closed captions on, and in addition to the people speaking, they make sure to let you know that dogs are barking.
Okay.
That it is that important for those who are hard of hearing to know that there are dogs barking. Now, I've never heard these dogs barking because I'm just used to background noises, but I actually now, because I've seen these closed captions, think that dogs are going to play a little part, that the dog plotline is not just something whatever, but it actually is going to have a little bit of, it's somehow dogs are going to play a role.
Some substance to this.
Yes.
To the Dean theory.
Because of closed captions.
Wow. Look at you.
I know. I feel like a sleuth.
So that is your sudden theory.
I hope it's totally not nothing and Damon's like, oh, that poor girl, one of our 38 listeners actually reads the closed captions. We just needed a filler.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, my darling. Notice I did not call you my love. My darling.
Okay.
Final thoughts for this episode. What do you got?
I had a blast. I'm really sad that there are 6 episodes left, but it's rocking and rolling. And Wu-Tang.
My final thought is the song. Nothing is going to stand in my way. You know, you know what? This is what we're going to do. Come on. I'm going to play this while I'm saying this. My final thoughts. The words in this, nothing's going to stand in my way. And again, it does apply to the song. It applies to Mark Lynn Baker and Perfect Strangers. Thank you very much. But it really does apply to Nora, in my opinion. And this is, again, why I feel like she is going to be the main character. And the reason why I say that is because it feels like nothing is going to stand in Nora's way. There it is. Nothing is going to stand in Nora's way. And it is eventually going to cause... it's going to cause her demise. Hold on.
It's so good.
It is good.
I need pop rocks. And slap bracelets.
And slap bracelets and gack. And pogs.
I made such a mess with gack. And I used to collect pogs. I sucked at playing pogs. But awesome. I'm loving this theory.
So that ultimately is see?
Preston just put, nothing's going to stop the honey badger.
Mark Boyd says, great job, guys. Cheers from Scotland. Thank you for watching from Scotland.
So there we go.
That is that. That's what I feel like. I think it's going to be Nora's demise. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to be. Nothing. She is just so committed. She is so focused on what she's doing. It's going to cause a problem.
I hope there's no flood. I know there's talk of floods. I hate floods.
I know. So you ready to close out the show, my love?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do it.
So we are online, but honestly, right now, last season, we are putting the majority of our efforts, I'd say, in Facebook.
Right.
Like, that's where, because we're doing Facebook Live for every single episode, that's where you want to be. Like, make sure you like our page. You make sure that you get the notifications. That's where we're having these conversations. That's where we're pulling a lot of quotes. Find us on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We're like barely on Instagram because there's not a lot of pretty pictures to put of this show up. And I was like, I just need to put my effort in one place. So find us on Facebook, guys.
That's
you can
right.
also shoot us a long message, an email, right?
At livingreminders@gmail.com. And you know, I wanted to say one last thing too. I forgot this. Keith Gordon, the director, directed the hell out of this episode.
Correct.
I mean, the conversation with Mark Lynn Baker, there's also a couple of shots too with Nora walking towards the camera from the airports, going in and out of focus. And also as she's waiting for Lynn Baker in the hotel, mm-hmm. you have those elevators going up and down, much like, you know, Nora's life up and down.
Ooh,
baby. So nailed it. So yes, if you want to talk about that, email us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Our website, of course, is livingreminders.com. And let me tell you, okay, so let's make Damon happy. Let's tell more people about this show while it is still on air. I just saw in our Facebook chat that like HBO is free. HBO is free for a month or something like that, that you can be watching this show. So if you have a friend who doesn't have HBO and that is the reason that they do not watch The Leftovers, mm-hmm. tell them. Let them use your HBO password. I don't care. Let them watch it. But then in addition, please like spread the word about our podcast, because this is the best way to let other people know about podcasts. Well, it's not...
Apparently, the people have been doing that, because I want to thank all of you that are watching live or have listened to us on the podcast. As always, we want you to listen to the podcast. That is the way that we prefer that you listen to us. The podcast, literally, the last episode, is the most popular we have ever put out for The Leftovers. And not only did it break our record, it, like, tripled it. Like, it was crazy.
So, like, even if you watch this on Facebook Live, if you download the episode for us, it makes us even, like, doubly happy, because it's huge. It's huge to us. So
right.
Thank you, and thank you for telling your friends. It is the best way to spread the love, is to tell your friends and to show them how to listen to a podcast if they never listened to a podcast before.
By the way, we went over the music.
That's totally okay.
I know. It's kind of my fault, really. So
right.
In the meantime, are we going to end it?
Yeah.
Is that the end?
That's the end. So right. Ladies and gents, until next time, I'm Mary Larson.
No, you're not. No.
I am Spunky, Misunderstood Genius.
And my name is Zexy Prophet.
And we're still here. Okay, so...